Welcome back to the 9-8 podcast, the home of progressive and underground music right here in Australia. My name is Alex Hogg, and every fortnight I'm joined by the wonderful man in Sydney, Mr. Dave Ellis. Hello.
G'day, g'day. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad. You sound a bit nasally, mate.
You got a bit of a flu thing. Tis the season of the flu for me.
Damn, that sucks.
This is, yeah, now it's my, you say all the time, oh, I'm sorry about my voice. Now it's my turn. I'm the one who's got the nasally voice today, but
the things
mind will struggle on.
Absolutely, absolutely. And we have a massive, massive episode today.
Yes, we do. We have many things. We have many things to talk about today. I'll start, though, with a quick shout out. I was at a gig on Saturday night in Perth, Proclamation 3. Organised by Daniel Wiggins, who is a friend of the show, came up and said hello, and we chit-chatted about the show that he'd put on. Great set of his. Always fun when you can finish your set with a Porcupine Tree cover.
Oh, absolutely. What did they finish with?
Yeah. The Planet, the Sound of Music.
Oh, yeah, man.
He did it. Did it very, very well.
Oh, that's a killer track,
also,
too.
Also on the... on the bill for the night was friends of the show Kripke's Illusion, who finished, well, actually didn't finish their set. The second last set of their show was Dream Theater's Wait for Sleep.
Ooh, very nice.
Yes, which they did very well.
Yeah, and it's a, the thing I like about that song too is that it's, you know, there's not crazy time signatures and polyrhythms and all that sort of stuff. It's just a nice track.
You just get the piano groove happening and then the vocals sort of sit very nicely on top. I actually said to the band after the show, if you'd given me some heads up, I would have recorded it. And we would have something to play on the Dream Theater fan club or for the show or whatever. But they didn't tell me. They did hint at it before. They said, oh yeah, we've got a surprise in the set, but we're not going to tell you what it is. God damn it. And I wish they had fucking told me.
Yeah, well, anyway. Sometimes it's useful if they tell you what's going on prior, you know?
Yeah, yeah. So I also had a quick chance to have a quick chat to Daniel from Magnesis while I was at the show last night. They'll be playing next week in Perth. Unfortunately, I won't be able to attend either of those shows, but if you are around, Magnesis, check it out. We played their EP on the last show. So check it out. Speaking of other bands that we've mentioned on the show, New Media will be playing a show in 2 weeks' time in Perth at the Civic Hotel. So I'll be there for that one. Come and say hello.
Absolutely.
All right. So we've kind of already started with the news, so let's just keep rolling on with the news.
So you've also got in here something about Chaos Divine. Being the person from the West Coast, I think you should probably tell everyone about that because you're probably closer to the action than I am.
Finally, their new single, Unspoken, will be out on Wednesday. So that's 2 days from now at time of recording. It will be streamed officially on Prog Magazine.
Excellent.
The link in the show notes will direct you to where it will be. So check that one out. We have both heard this single live at Progfest. If you were at Progfest, you probably heard it as well.
Great track. What a track.
Great track, yes. The forthcoming album that is still in the pipeline, they're still working on that as far as I'm aware. There's been a few delays with that one, which, understandable. Things take time. But yeah, the new single, Unspoken, out shortly. Get around it.
Absolutely.
Pre-order it on iTunes.
Yeah, absolutely. Pre-order it wherever you see fit.
Have they got a Bandcamp? They do have a Bandcamp. That's usually where I buy all my stuff from. Yeah. I tend to go to Bandcamp for these sorts of things because that's my usual spot where I buy my music because I've pretty much forsaken iTunes.
Yeah, well, I think as well as that, the vast majority of the money also goes to the artist. So there's not
Bandcamp do take a slice of the pie like everybody else, but
of course
it's not as big as a slice as Apple does.
No, absolutely not. And you can also
there's been,
generally add in other things, and there's better ways to for artists. You know, you can say, okay, we want your email as well, so it lets them keep in touch with you and let you know if there's new things coming out, if there's a tour in the area and so on and so forth. So
exactly,
it's a really good way for the band to stay in touch with you as well, if you really like what you're hearing. So
exactly, especially since the avalanche of Facebook notifications that you have to turn on so you can hear anything from anyone. Email lists are probably the way to go.
Absolutely, absolutely. And a lot of people I know actually turn their Facebook notifications off. I mean,
I have them all turned on, and it is, that's why I say for me it's an avalanche, because I have them all turned on. My phone does not go ding when I get a notification, though. I turn that off, but I get badge notifications for everything, because frankly, it's the only way I can ever hear anything.
Yeah, Steph says to me all the time, you know, oh, did you get the invite to this party or this thing going on? I'm like, I don't fucking know. Where did it? Oh, they sent you a Facebook invite. So I don't look at them. I get like 28 a minute. Like I genuinely don't look at them. If you want to invite me to something, message me or text me or call me. You know, it just does my head in. It really does.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, this is a problem with social, especially when you've got Facebook trying to get in the middle of it to get people to pay for those. We get pages to pay for those sorts of things.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. It's even more irritating where you've got sponsored stuff, and the Facebook algorithm's actually becoming really, really good at figuring out what you want when you want it as well, which is kind of becoming a bit scary, to be really honest with you.
Mostly give up on that stuff and try and have a most recent feed most of the time, but on the phone, especially on the phone, that is almost impossible.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. It's a bit irritating, actually, I find, but yeah. Again, that's me.
So, I've mentioned a band that is local to me. Now, let's talk about one that is local to you, the Omnific.
Yeah, if you caught Cog on their latest tour, which is called the Drawn Together Tour, which is brilliant, by the way. If you didn't catch it, you really missed out, not trying to rub salt in wounds. But these guys actually open for them. They're a three-piece from Melbourne, and they're two bass players and a drummer.
Wait, bass players?
Two bass players and a drummer. So basically animals as leaders, but instead of guitarists, they're bass players. And they're ridiculous musicians. Now, I've actually got their upcoming album, which is going to be released on the 10th of May. I actually have it. I was given it by the band's management, and they said, hey, can you, you know, have a listen to this and do a review for us? And I said, yeah, no problems at all. So we're actually going to try and get these guys on the show, and we're going to do a review of the album as well. But very, very briefly, because we've got a lot to talk about this week, everyone needs to go and pre-order this. It is absolutely fantastic. It's also really nice to see bands using a mixture of live instruments, live drums, live bass and everything like that with digital like drum machines and then like synth elements and things like that as well, sort of all mixed in. This new era of prog that's coming through is really, really exciting, and it's actually nice to see Australia kind of almost leading the way with a lot of that stuff now. And these guys are definitely, I think, blazing a trail of strangeness. Interestingly, these guys are actually touring next month as well. They're playing on the 17th of May, and Genetics are actually supporting them. So if you want to see both those bands and you're in Sydney, it's the Crowbar, I believe, on the 17th of May. So, and we'll find out a little bit more about that when you guys hear the interview a little bit later with Shane.
So the opening track of this album that is available to stream is called The Stoic, and we're just going to cut to playing a little bit of it right now.
So that was a little bit of the track that is available for you to stream now on their Bandcamp, called The Stoic. Have you listened to this, Hoggy?
Oh, yes, I have.
What'd you think?
Boy, do I love bass solos.
I think we've talked about this before,
to be
actually.
Honest, I really, really enjoy the use of the bass guitar as a guitar. There's plenty of stuff there that you totally could have done with an 8-string and done the whole djenty thing. But to do it with a bass guitar, and to have the bass pushed way out there as a lead instrument, I really enjoy that kind of stuff. It's really, really cool. It's kind of fun to have like the synth pad thing in the background. You could probably develop that a bit further by having like actual like keyboard lines and stuff. Mm-hmm. But finding keyboard players to play in your band is always a bit tricky.
Yes. Yeah. Well, these guys are from Melbourne, so maybe not so much there because, you know, as I've said numerous times on the show, the entirety of Australia's music scene is now in Melbourne and just, well, actually, it's just not in Sydney.
Nothing is in Sydney more. The only thing that's in Sydney now is property developers and Mark Latham.
I like the idea of property developers and Mark Latham sort of being in bed together. I think that's a really weird thing to put. It feels like something you'd see on the front on the cover of a punk album.
Property developers and Mark Latham. If that's not the cover of your next album, Dave.
Anyway. Oh, God, maybe they'll name a song after it.
But you say May 17th and Genetics are supporting, right?
Yeah, May 17th, Genetics are supporting them at the Crowbar here in Sydney, which used to be called the Bald-Faced Stag for those of you who are somewhat uninitiated and or, you know, unaware of what's going on. If I
can afford it, Dave, I might make a trip over for that one.
I hope you do.
I put a big if on that because I have many, 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 many things going on right now.
No, that's fair. That's fair. I know you're a busy boy as it stands
yes,
at the
I
moment.
Am.
So those guys are coming up. And one other guy to look out for, and I've mentioned this guy a few times on the podcast, is Stephen Taranto. Now, Stephen Taranto is the guitarist from a band called the Helix Nebula, undoubtedly massive prog heads and so on and so forth, fans of Animals as Leaders and guys like the Omnific and everything like that would love this. He's actually released his debut EP called Permanence. This guy is insane so far as music is concerned, and particularly as a guitarist. He is just absolutely absurd. You think James Norbert Ivani is good? James Norbert Ivani calls this guy a freak. That gives you an idea.
That's high praise.
This guy is a nut. Like, he is a nut. He's got an Instagram where he just posts, it's like, oh, just warming up. And it's like, if that's your warm-up, can you stop? Please just stop.
It's like John Petrucci's warm-ups. You got to warm up to do his warm-up.
Yeah. That's right. That's exactly it.
I've seen so many people on that. Like, if you've watched his his instructional video from, I think it was back in like the early 90s, Rock Discipline.
Rock Discipline, yep.
Yeah, where he's doing all the warm-up exercises. And the comment section below that is like, I have to warm up just to do these warm-ups. What's going on?
I know. But yeah, so definitely that's available on Bandcamp as well. It's also streamed. Like, you can listen to it on Spotify and all that sort of stuff. But, you know, buy the album. Like, support this guy because he has worked ridiculously hard at his craft for many, many years. And he deserves, you know, some album sales. So go check that one out. We'll put that also in the show notes where everything else sort of lives.
Absolutely. I did have a chance to listen to a portion of this record before we started recording today. And boy, oh boy, is that a great... It sounds great.
Can't wait to sit down and listen. Mastered, like the whole thing is just a phenomenal, phenomenal album. And typical of Taranto, there's a lot of mind bending guitar work in there. So definitely go and check that one out.
Absolutely. Now, we were speaking earlier of Melbourne, and this piece of news here comes from friend of the show, Josh Batten.
Yep.
Virgil Donati will be coming back and playing a series of shows later this year.
Yes. Beautiful. Beautiful.
So he will be playing on the 12th, 13th, 14th, 15th, and the 16th of June at the Bird's Basement in Melbourne. Tickets are $35 plus a booking fee. So he will be playing with special guest Jack Jones, a.k.a. Irwin Thomas, on vocals and guitar. He'll also be bringing his young Brazilian guys along with him, Andre Nieri and Junior. And Junior on bass. And Chris Clark of Brand X fame will be on keyboards. I've seen this trio, him and his two young Brazilian sensations on guitar and bass. I've seen them play. I saw them play a couple of years ago in Sofia. It is a damn good live show. For Christ's sake, if you live in Melbourne, live near Melbourne, can a possibility to get to Melbourne, buy a damn ticket to these shows.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And Virgil, for those who maybe don't know this, he actually auditioned for Dream Theater when they were replacing Mike Portnoy. And he came from a very different... Obviously, he comes from a bit of a different background to some of the other drummers that were there. But it actually would have been really cool to have an Australian representative in that band as well. Would have been funny. On that, by the way, I saw a thing the other day on the Dream Theater page, and it said James LaBrie wants to take a 5-year hiatus. Who replaces James LaBrie? Funnily enough, the top comment was Mike Mills.
Really?
Yeah. This guy was like, Mike Mills from Toe Hider, like, because his range is insane and he's a nice dude and blah, 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 blah. So I thought it was really, really interesting. And Mike, if you're listening, there you go. If James ever leaves Dream Theater, you know where you can you can go next.
If James ever leaves Dream Theater, that's the end of Dream Theater.
this is exactly correct. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, it's like, nah.
Yeah.
At that stage of their career, it'd be like, nah, that's it.
Yeah, GG. Pack it up, boys.
Yeah.
Which we hope doesn't happen for a long, long, long time.
Absolutely.
Speaking of King Crimson, 50th anniversary.
This would have been really handy a couple of weeks ago if he would mentioned it. Because we've got an album review with King Crimson coming up later in the show. But they've decided that they will now be streaming all of their things on Spotify.
Yay!
Is that what you...
That's brilliant, because yes. I had to do some dodgy deals to get that album to listen to it. So I had to look at some very, very shady websites to try and find it.
Yes.
To stream.
So they're going to be streaming. They have finally waved the white flag and be like, okay, yes, we realize it. This is where all the young fans are getting their music from, and we were kind of mad to not get involved. So they will be streaming their music on Spotify.
And finally. I believe because they've got an upcoming tour as well. It's 50th anniversary or something, don't they?
Yes, they have. They'll be playing a whole bunch. They're playing at the Royal Albert Hall for 3 shows, which I'll be there for all 3. Come and say hello if you're there. And on this upcoming tour, Theo Travis will be playing keyboards in place of Bill Roethlin, who is taking a step back from the band to focus on family matters.
Fair enough.
So we wish him all the best with that, and welcome Theo Travis.
Absolutely, absolutely.
This is not the first time this has happened, by the way. Bill's had to step away from the band a couple of times in recent years to focus on other matters. Chris Gibson replaced him on an American tour at one point. This is actually how Jeremy Stacey came into the band, because Bill was, when he first joined the band, one of the 3 drummers, and then he left the band for a while to attend to some other things, and Jeremy came in. They kept Jeremy around on the drums and moved Bill to keyboards.
Yeah, right, okay. There you go. I didn't know that.
Yeah. So that would be good fun. King Crimson, 50th anniversary tour. They're playing. They've just announced some shows in South America, because of course they have. They're playing in Germany. They're playing in England. I think they've got a show in Italy somewhere.
Beautiful.
Yes.
That's awesome.
Numerous attempts have been made to get them to Australia at various points in the time. It's not going to happen.
I was going to say we should try and get them to Australia, but then I remembered, no, that won't ever happen.
You're not going to get you're not going to get 9 members of a band, 3 drum kits, and a whole bunch of other stuff down here. It just won't happen.
Yeah, and this is really one of the problems with the touring scene as it currently stands in Australia too, is that, I mean, in today's day and age, and I've said this before, we don't need people to bring all their drum kits and everything like that, but in Australia, you kind of almost do, because the backline companies that we've got, we've really got 1, right? There are a couple, but realistically, it's Billy Hyde Stage Systems, and that's about it, right? Even they don't... You can't supply absolutely everything. So there are bands that are coming
especially
over
not 3 full drum kits, that's for sure.
Well, 3
full drum kits and
an
array of percussion, yeah.
you know, and it's actually really sad. And that's sort of the state of the music industry in Australia. And this is why so many bands choose to go overseas because, yeah. you know, they get, I mean, Cold just got back from overseas. They've had a tour over there and you know, that they were saying, you know, Lucius was saying that it's completely different over there. And we've heard this before from so many people that have gone into it over there. You know, I've spoken to the boys from Polaris. I've spoken to the guys from Caligula's Horse and many other bands. And they all say that it's just a completely different world over there. You're actually treated like a human as opposed to over here. You're just sort of treated almost like an interference live to action the Pokey jukebox. Machines.
Live you action know? Jukeboxes, I think, is how I would probably describe how some promoters treat, well, how some venues treat their bands.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's kind of like, can you keep it down? We need to sell more beer.
Yeah, exactly. But that's exactly yes. it. Whereas, you know, even in the UK, which has got a very similar drinking culture to what we do, you know, they're still not treated that way. So, you know, this is yeah. sort of a symptom of a much bigger problem, unfortunately. That and it's a long way away. You know, I mean,
yeah,
it's a long way to come here. So, and again, this is economics of touring, which we've spoken about sort of a little yeah. bit at length and a little bit not. So we've skimmed over it, I think, a couple of times.
Yeah. But speaking of tours.
Someone else who's got a new tour coming up is Rick Wakeman.
Yes. Well, it's not so much a tour as it is a selection of concerts in London.
Ah.
So he's celebrating his 70th birthday. And to celebrate his 70th birthday, he's going to be playing Journey to the Centre of the Earth at the Royal Festival Hall. Mm. I had to slip up this one. Now, the way that this one works is that 45 years ago, he debuted Journey to the Centre of the Earth in the same hall, so he thought for his 70th birthday, it'd be good fun to do it all again.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So he will be playing two concerts in July at the Royal Festival Hall, which I have tickets for. If you're there at the show, come and say hello.
Mm-hmm.
Tickets are still available for this gig if you do want to come along. They aren't particularly expensive either. I was expecting to be gouged for several hundred pounds a go, but it actually isn't.
Okay.
So, yes, if you actually want to go and see Rick Wakeman, because frankly, who knows how long that's going to keep going on for? He's now 70. Get out there and get some tickets. The likelihood now, here's the other thing we're talking about economics of touring. The likelihood of him ever touring outside the UK ever again is essentially nil.
Right.
I don't think he's actually toured outside the UK aside from when he's been with Yes or ARW in ages.
Yeah, right. Is there a reason for that or?
Yeah, he basically can't afford it.
Right.
He doesn't want to have to do I think he's been stitched up one too many times by shady promoters promising gigs in other places. I know he played a gig in Bulgaria like 10 or 11 years, probably nearly 10 years ago now. And I think it was a Polish promoter or something. And he did a gig with an orchestra in Plovdiv. Not at the Roman Amphitheatre, actually. This one was indoors. And he was telling me when we asked him about it that the promoter died like a week and a half after the show, and I don't think he ever got paid for it.
Oh, you're kidding.
I think it's how that worked, because it was filmed. That gig was filmed, and we wanted to know where the film was. And he's like, well, you'll have to ask the promoter's family, because he's dead and I haven't seen the tape in 10 years.
Wow.
So, yeah. I think he's been burned one too many times playing in fun places where it might sound like good fun to play, but he's never been paid.
Fuck me.
Yes.
That's annoying. That's really annoying.
Yeah, yeah, it is. But hey, let's keep the fun vibe of the show, keep rolling. We were talking about keyboard players.
Yes.
Jordan Rudess' live Facebook Q&A. Now, you were awake for this, even though it was much later in the evening than it was for me.
Yes.
Far I just away, got Dave. Home. What was he talking about?
Mate, I just got home from work. And I jumped online to sort of decompress after a very shitty night at work. And he was actually talking about his upcoming album, Wired for Madness. But, of course, it was a Q&A, so everyone naturally was asking about Dream Theater and everything like that. So I jumped on there and said, hey, you know, are we likely to see you in Australia
We joke about Marillion fans and their contractual obligation to ask about touring to Australia. I think we need to add that to the Dream Theater fan club as well.
Absolutely.
Like anytime any Australian ever asks anything about Dream Theater, the biggest question by mile is when are you coming to Australia?
Oh, absolutely. And I'll... give you the exact words because I actually put them down on the Dream Theater Fan Club of Australia and New Zealand's site. I actually put it on the Facebook page last night, and the exact words were, "We will come to Australia. There is no doubt." So
fantastic.
They are coming.
Where are they playing?
I don't know if it's going to be like a full massive, tour around all of Australia. James LaBrie obviously hinted on that at a previous date when he was talking about he wanted to get back over to Perth and Adelaide and things like that. And I'm kind of hoping that they can do it. I'd really like to see them do a full Australian tour. I'd actually really like to see them do a tour in Australia and then spend, you know, a little bit of time here actually traveling and seeing some of the other stuff that we've got in Australia rather than just the cities, because there's some really nice stuff, particularly out in the middle of, you know, the middle of the continent, which is, you know, kind of nothing, but it's kind of nice.
Well, if you remember from our second episode...
Mm.
We talked about when the day you and I first met at the Dream Theater meet and greet at a couple of tours ago now. Mm. And the bit that you didn't hear because you were too busy with your shirt off was somebody asked John Myung, "What do you think of Australia?" And apparently the response was, "Oh, yeah, we come here all the time on holiday." We, in this context, being him and his wife.
Yeah, yeah, that was actually Simon from Red Gazelle who asked him that.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So,
yeah, right, okay.
But I'm just looking at the comments now. I've just pulled them up, and there's a lot of people saying the same thing. I hope Adelaide is included. I hope that it goes with what JLB said about wanting to do a proper Australian run. Another person saying they'll skip Perth again. They haven't been to Perth since Portnoy left.
Yeah, they haven't been to Perth in 10 years.
Yeah, exactly.
For a bunch of those years, they skipped Australia altogether, so we can't really hold that against them.
No, well, yeah, exactly, exactly. I mean, we
missed
out on a couple of tours.
People still will, but we shouldn't.
No, we shouldn't. It's not entirely their fault. I mean, the economics of touring and everything like that, again, rears its ugly head, unfortunately, in Australia.
As we've said before, time and time on the show, the only way they can come to Australia is once they've got an Asian tour booked, and then they can try and squeeze in a couple of Australian dates here, there, and everywhere.
That's right, yeah.
That's how it works.
Exactly.
So
100%.
If they're talking about an Australian tour, they probably have an Asian tour at least most of the way to being in the pipeline.
Well, I mean, they'll definitely do Asia again. Definitely.
Because they sell out
shit in Asia, you know.
And also, the first market that truly embraced the band after the American market was Japan.
Yeah, absolutely.
Japan, they have a long-standing relationship with big Japanese gigs. They're playing at the Budokan, absolutely, for goodness sake, you know.
I know, the Budokan would be a dream to play there.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, so that obviously from the Jordan Rudess camp in the early hours of this morning at about 1:30 Australian Eastern time, which we're back to Australian Eastern Standard Time. No more daylight savings. Yay.
Yay.
And something else that came up from Dream Theater the other day, and I'm particularly excited about this because I like a beer or two. They've announced a collaboration with a brewing company to bring out a beer.
Now, when I first saw this, I had to double check and triple check to make sure this was not an April Fool's Day wind-up.
Me too.
And April Fool's Day wind-ups have been a bit of a feature of my last week for reasons that we're not going to go into on the show just yet. April Fool's Day wind-ups are all over the place, and I had to triple-check this one to make sure that I wasn't being stitched up. Apparently, this is real. There is Dream Theater beer, and it is called... What is it called again, Dave?
Bastard Warrior
or something? Yeah, it is called Bastard Warrior.
Yeah.
I did see in the comments of one of the Facebook posts, which I can't find right now, but I'm sure people out there will find it. Like, many, many other fun names for Dream Theater beer included Innocence Faded.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, many, many other fun names for beer. And I also saw some other comments, people saying, "Oh, but you've got like the AA suite and now you're going to sell beer." And it's like, oh, for crying out loud.
Yeah, yeah. What do you think about that, Hoggy? What do you think about the fact that they're sort of...
Look.
Because I asked this the other week. Remember I asked, you know, I wonder what the dynamic is like now that they can all have a drink and things like that, because Mike's no longer in the band. I wonder how it's changed it. And then a couple of weeks later, they announce this. So,
yeah. Look, if Metallica, a band full of recovering alcohol, or at least three recovering alcoholics, as far as I can work out, can put their label on and sell whiskey. I'm pretty sure Dream Theater, with one ex-member who is a recovering alcoholic, no longer in the band, I'm pretty sure they can sell a fucking beer if they want to.
Yeah, I agree with you. I brew beer myself. You have drunk my beer.
Yes, I have. It's very good.
I appreciate a good beer, right? So,
how are we not selling the 9-8 beer? How are we not selling that?
This is a remarkable question, actually. How are we not selling that? You know what? Send us an email. If you'd like a 9-8 beer, let me know. I'll see what I can do.
If you could figure out a way to send beer in the mail, Dave, that's your problem.
I know a way to sell beer to send beer in the mail, and it's called Don't Use Australia Post.
it'll turn up late, broken, and possibly stolen.
I was going to say it won't turn up at all. The poster, you'll fucking have it on his. You'll see him riding along on a bike with a bloody pint sitting on the handlebars.
Oh dear.
But yeah, so I mean, I appreciate a really good beer, and I know that Petrucci's gotten quite heavily into bourbon as well. Not heavily as in he's an alcoholic, but he's, you know, become a bit of a bourbon snob, which he admits himself. He's a bourbon snob. Since he started getting into like smoking meats and all that sort of stuff, and sort of started his what I call the beefcake era of Petrucci. So, you know, so
you can tell him that next time you see
they're going through to with, you know, having a beer and all that sort of stuff. I just kind of really hope that it's a really nice ale and it's not a shit American beer, because there's a lot of shit American beer, and I hope it's not like, you know, a lot of bands.
What are you suggesting it's going to be like? Some sort of Bud Light?
Well, you know what they say about American beer? It's kind of like making love in a canoe.
Yeah, fucking close to water. I'm familiar with the concept.
But it's... I just hope it's a really good beer. I really do. And I kind of hope that I get the opportunity to try it here in Australia.
I wouldn't put any money on that.
Well, I wouldn't either. I have actually contacted the brewing company, which is Barrier Brewing, and I believe they're in... in New York, actually, from Oceanside, I think, in New York. Yes, they're in Oceanside in New York. There you go. I've actually contacted them and said, hey, is it going to be available in Australia? I would really, really like to see it here, but we'll see how it goes. And they look like a good brewing company as well. They're doing some sours and they're doing, you know, a little bit more sort of interesting beers rather than just a straight up Pilsner or something like that. So I hope it's a good beer. Mm-hmm. What we'll do as well, we're going to get in contact with the guys from the brewing company and see whether or not we can get some and maybe do a review on the show for you all, so you can hear us drinking beer while we're doing the show. We don't know yet. That's probably just a pipe dream, but all the best of luck with their alcoholic escapades, I suppose, to the boys from Dream Theater. Now, Big Big Train, new album.
Yes. Now, the Big Big Train are a big, big, ha-ha, they're a big deal in the UK. They've got a lot of members, I believe. I don't know if Nick DiVigilio from Spock's Beard is still part of the band, but he was for a while, and they have produced some very, very good prog albums over the years. Mm-hmm. They have a new album out called The Grand Tour. Mm-hmm. It'll be out in May. I'll put a link in the show notes so you can have a look at the cover art and the track list. Lots of long songs on there. There are three songs on the record that are nearly 15 minutes long.
Awesome.
Nick DiVigilio is still in the band. They have drawn inspiration from 17th and 18th century custom, where young men and women travelled across the world to broaden their minds, with the record focused on, quote, songs set in distant lands and beyond. Sounds awesome. The album will be released on vinyl, because everything is on vinyl. That will come with a 24-page book, and there will also be a CD version with a 52-page book and also the usual standard and high-resolution downloads.
Beautiful.
They will also be touring across the UK later on in the year, around about October, November time. So keep an eye out for that one. If you are a fan of kind of the traditional prog sounds and you have not heard Big Big Train yet, you need to rectify that immediately.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the final bit of news. Whew, it's been a long news section.
I was going to say, we're an hour in and we haven't even got to our main topic yet.
Yeah, that's all right. The final bit of news here for this fortnight, Dead of Winter Festival. This is a sort of a bit of an old bit of news, but I just wanted to highlight it really quickly. Dead of Winter Festival is happening in Brisbane this year, and the lineup is massive. It's happening on the 13th of July. Myself, I will be going, as well as Steph will be joining me up there as well. So if you're up there and you see us, come and say g'day. We don't bite. But the lineup, to give you an idea, is headlined by Cog. Then there's Disentomb, Mammal, Body Jar, 28 Days, and to name some of the others that are going to be there: Beast Wars, Voyager, Low, Truth Be.
Now I know where you're going.
Grave Mind, yep. Whiskey and Speed, Potion the Wrath, Patient Lounge, From Crisis to Collapse, and a whole bunch more. It's going to be at the Jubilee Hotel, and it's going to be huge.
I see Opus of a Machine is on the list as well.
Yes, yes. Yeah. The whole thing
is
going to be huge.
This looks like a lot of fun. I wish I could be there, but unfortunately I'll actually be in London then.
Yeah, well, you know.
That's the second night of the Rick Wakeman shows, but... Mm.
Well, there you go. But it's going to be
I'm a bastard.
Yes, you see, I've trained you so well. It's like Pavlov. You mention like your holidays and you call yourself a bastard. It's great.
It's like a Pavlovian response, isn't it?
But yeah, it's going to be a huge gig. And there's even Svetlana's coming over from Russia. So you know, there's a few international bands that are going to come for it, but obviously the big ones for me are Voyager, Cog, Mammal, and Opus being on the bill as well. So that's going to be really good, and hopefully I'll see you all there. Genetics from one of our episodes a little while ago, where I was fortunate enough to have the boys from Genetics on the line and have a quick chat to them about what they did in Sydney and how they overcame, you know, their playing loves in Sydney and the scene in Sydney as it is. And I'm pleased to say on the line with me right now is one of the members, Shane, from Genetics. And we're going to be talking about their upcoming album, which is coming out on the 27th of May. Shane, welcome to the podcast, or welcome back, I should say, to the 9-8 podcast.
Thank you very much. Hey. Good to be back.
It's good to have you back since we last spoke. Now, you guys have been quite busy, and you guys are releasing your brand new album in a little over a month's time. Tell us a bit about how long you guys have been writing that one and sort of what the concept is behind it.
Well, we've been writing it. Actually, it was similar to our first album, where it came together pretty quickly. Like, we originally wrote all the demos and stuff around the middle of 2015.
Mm-hmm.
But we didn't want to release it the way we did with the first one, where we just sort of programmed the drums and pushed it out because we had university to get back to, you know what I mean? That was sort of like a holiday project.
Mm-hmm.
So with this one, we sort of thought, well, now we have a bass player, a permanent drummer, so let's actually... you know, put them to use. So we sort of waited and workshopped all the songs over the period of a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
And just sort of, we weren't really on anyone's schedule, so we didn't think we had to push it out at any one time. So that's why we sort of took out solid message every day.
That's fantastic. It's always good to have the creative process, I suppose, that's not rushed. I know I've been in a few bands where we've had to sort of get stuff out as quickly as we can, and it can always be a little bit difficult. Now, you guys have got a gig coming up with Omnific, who are a very interesting prog band out of Melbourne,
that's correct.
I believe.
That's correct, yeah.
Two bass players and a drummer, so sort of like animals as leaders, but if they were bass players.
That's it, yeah.
And that's actually on the day that your new album's actually coming out, which is on the 17th of May,
yeah.
Down at Crowbar in Sydney. How'd you guys get on that bill? Did they just give you a call and say, hey, we've heard about you, or did you have to hustle for it? Tell us about that.
Well, it's interesting because the first time that we actually, I think one of the first times that they played live, me and Jay actually took a drive down to a little bit further past Wollongong to come see them play up in this attic somewhere, which sounded like crap, and it was a really interesting sort of gig, and we just sort of had a chat with them since we're doing the same sort of thing, like obscure prog band that no one knows about, so we thought we'd go check them out and shake hands and get to know the guys, and yeah, so we sort of kept in contact online, and I think they just, their management said, sent us an email and said, hey, you guys interested in being on this show? And we said, yes we are. Because we were looking to do some shows around this time anyway, because by then we knew the album would be wrapping up and we'd be looking to play again. So, yeah, kind of just a bit of good luck and good timing, I think it was.
Absolutely. And they're quite good. I actually managed to catch them with Cog a little while ago, and they're quite good. The boys,
they're tremendous musicians. Like I play a little bit of bass, you know, but it's just I want to sell mine now.
That's the mark of a good musician, I think, when everyone else wants to stop playing.
Pretty much.
So the title of your upcoming album is Synosia. Is that correct? Am I saying that right?
I think you are. I've heard it said a couple of different ways. That's kind of the way we pronounce it. So, sure, why not?
Excellent. And I know that obviously I've heard the track that is released there, Samsara, and that's an absolutely killer track, and especially with that stuff in the middle there where you've got the samples in the middle there of, I guess that's Neil deGrasse Tyson, it sounds like, talking about the universe.
That is, yeah.
Like that.
It's Neil deGrasse Tyson, yeah.
Did you have to go through any processes to actually get the permission to use those, or are you just sort of doing it and going to release it and then get the permission afterwards?
Well, yeah, we haven't really looked at the permission side of it yet. I think, from what I understand about the, you know, the fair use stuff, we're using it in a transformative way. We're not really devaluing the original, the original recording. So I think we should be fine. But in terms of anything official, we haven't really looked up anything yet.
I was just curious because I remember the last time we had a chat, you were talking about how you'd use some comedians and things like that in your works as well, and you were looking into potentially what you would have to do if you wanted to use that on an album. So it's good that it's a transformative work and that it comes out of the fair use policy.
Mm-hmm. Well, we haven't had any issues yet, so I think we should be sweet.
Absolutely. So you guys are pretty well in the studio at the moment, practicing, I presume, rehearsing for this upcoming gig. What other gigs have you guys got lined up? I know you've got this one in Crowbar with the Omnific. Have you got any others that our listeners might like to come along to?
Not at the moment. Like we're sort of putting the feelers out and just sort of keeping our eyes open for things that we might want to get in contact with, but nothing really locked in at the moment. Which is probably also due to the fact that Luke's wife's having their first baby around that time. Mm-hmm. So anytime after that, we're going to have to slow down just a little bit by virtue of Luke becoming a father and everything that goes along with that.
Yeah,
so we're kind of also deliberately taking things a bit slow around that time as well. So it's good timing and bad timing, I suppose, but not much we can do about that. So.
Well, I suppose. I mean, it is good timing and, as you say, sort of bad timing, but good timing, I suppose, for him becoming a father, and you'll have to pass on my congratulations with that.
Oh, absolutely, we'll do.
Once a little tyke's born. I suppose the only last thing is to say, where can we find this album if anyone wants to pre-order it? It's on Bandcamp, I believe, and we'll put some in the show notes. But is there anything in particular? Are there any special editions or anything that our listeners should be aware of?
Not at the moment. So pretty much we're just going for a straight digital release. I know if you guys pre-order it, it'll be available 10 days before it comes out. So I think it's either 10 days or 2 weeks before it comes out.
Awesome.
So that's probably one of the incentives we've got. Other than that, just for the moment at least, just a straight digital release on all the usual platforms, on Spotify, and also on Bandcamp as well. So,
Excellent. That's good. Well, Shane, thank you so much for your time. I said it was going to be a quick chat.
Not a problem, man.
Just about the new album and what Genetics is up to. Genetics, their new album, Cenosha, will be available either 10 days early if you pre-order it, which I highly recommend you do. Get out and support your local music scene and purchase some music off. Probably some of the best prog musos, I should say, that are coming out of Sydney.
You are too kind.
Oh, thank you. All right, Shane, thank you so much. I'll speak to you later.
Not a problem, man. Have a good day.
Thanks, mate. You too. That was Shane from Genetics, one of the guitarists from the killer band Four Piece out of Sydney, Genetics, releasing their sophomore album, Cenosha, on the 17th of May, which is actually the same day that they're going to be playing with the fantastic Omnific, at Crowbar in Sydney. Definitely jump on their Bandcamp and check those guys out. Definitely jump on there and pre-order that album because it means you get it 10 days early. And they are fantastic musos who deserve to have that, have your support because they're hardworking and they're releasing some amazing music. And if Samsara is anything to go by, then this entire album is going to be an absolute ball terror. Hoggy?
Now, the track that you heard, was that Samsara?
Yes, it was. Yeah, which is
that is
which
the
is
one
available.
That is available. I've just pulled it up on Bandcamp. That is the one that is available for everyone to listen to now.
Absolutely.
So you want to hear some stuff before you buy the record? Check that one out. I have had a chance to listen to it. It is really, really good. Mm-hmm. If you're a fan of the first Genetics album, chances are you'll probably enjoy this one as well, this track as well. So check it out, people.
Absolutely. And I just want to say in here as well, there seems to be this sort of movement at the moment, particularly in instrumental prog, away from really heavy guitars and things like that, like your Animals as Leaders. And they're sort of moving towards that more crunchy, you know, sort of, I don't know how to say it, but less gain, a little bit more sort of cleaner playing and things like that, a la, you know, Polyphia and all that sort of stuff. And Genetics have definitely done that, at least from what I've heard, on this album as well. So
finally, all the progressive bands in Australia are sick to death of trying to sound like bloody Carnival.
But what's interesting, you mentioned
it was a scourge that was across the society, across the scene for a long time, and now finally people are starting to get past it, I think.
You mentioned that, but Carnival actually don't have the gain cranked up on their amps all that much. If you listen to, if you go into...
Guitar player, Dave, I'm not, so go for gold. Explain the guitar sounds away.
There's a great thing called Nail the Mix, which you can find on what it is basically you get all the tracks from a particular song and you can go through and figure out how people mix it and all that sort of stuff. And this was done by Forrester Saville, and he released the tracks for, I think it was New Day and Dead Man. But if you listen to the tracks in isolation, the guitars actually don't have that much gain on them. I think it's like a Vox AC30 or something that's sort of at the point of breaking up. You know, it's not a particularly heavy sound, but once you mix it in with the bass tone, the drums, the other like nine layers of guitars and everything like that, it becomes just huge. And it's really, really interesting to see that. So, Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you. It's nice to see people who are not just imitating Carnival, and they sort of get their own thing going. I do want to mention one band as well that I actually went and saw the other night, called Code Atlantic. They're from the Blue Mountains. Their singer is audibly a dead ringer for Kenny. And they've got a lot of Carnival influence in them as well, but there's a whole bunch of other stuff stacked in there and it makes them really interesting to listen to. So, guys, if you're listening to the podcast, great set the other night, and also everyone should definitely go and check them out.
Fantastic. We'll put a link to that in the show notes.
Absolutely.
I think we've kept the good people waiting long enough.
Yes.
Shall we dive into our main topic? We did promise last fortnight that we will be going track by track on Devin Townsend's Empath. And before we go track by track, Shall we just give a quick overview of the album as a whole? What do you think, Dave?
Look, it's a typical Devin Townsend track. I love Devin Townsend, particularly stuff that he did as the Devin Townsend Project. I'm in two minds about this album, I'll be really honest.
Really? Why is that?
Because there's tracks on it that I absolutely adore, and there are tracks on it that I despise.
Because they sound like West End musicals? I'm betting you're not much for the West End musical stuff.
No, I love that stuff. The ones that I don't like are the screamy... that stuff. I can't... Cookie Monster vocals and thrashy stuff. I hate thrash. I've always hated it. I know it's highly technical. I know what it takes to actually put something like that together, etc. I still hate it. So there are a few tracks on this album that I was like, really? But the vast majority of it is fantastic, and I would still give it, you know, a thumbs up to, you know, go out and fucking listen to it. But, yeah, and 74 minutes as well. So, you know, it's a decent length album, which is great. What about you? Brief overview, Hoggy?
Brief overview. I love this album. This is great. Is it going to be my album of the year? No, Dream Theater still sits on top of the pile for that one.
Mm-hmm.
But I really, really love the idea of heavy metal musical.
Yeah.
This is kind of what it is. There's a lot of choral, there's a lot of orchestral stuff mixed in with the obvious heavy metal stuff you've already talked about, and stuff that sounds like what I imagine Devin Townsend would write if he was going to write a West End musical.
I agree with you, yeah. And I think there's, like I said, there's some great tracks on there, and I'm not taking it away from the guy. I know he's an extremely talented musician, and I agree with you. You know, a heavy metal musical, like 100%. There's just tracks on it I just don't like. That's all.
Yep.
So should we dive in for a track by track?
So we've spoken about on the show already the lead-off single Genesis.
Yes.
It is preceded by a little bit at the start called Castaway. Now, what did you think of that one, Dave?
Castaway, this is what I mean. Like, I actually quite enjoyed Castaway because I really like – well, I mean, it reminded me of Hidden Citizens, right? So remember that album I gave you?
Yes, I remember that. The sort of epic versions of of like 80s music.
Yeah, and that's sort of what it reminded me of. I really liked it. And then obviously you've got the choir in there and everything else. You know, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a really, really good intro to the album. And I love a good intro song. This is no different. How about you? What do you think of Castaway?
Yeah, this is really, really cool. You've pretty much nailed it on the head, mate. It's just a great opening to the album.
Mm.
And then we bust straight into Genesis, which we've spoken about at length on the show already. I think we both sort of went, whoa, you know, what the hell is this with the sort of record? Especially with the gratuitous references to Cats, which make an appearance throughout the record.
Yes, yes.
No wonder he liked playing in Plovdiv so much. The town's essentially full of them. The track that I'm going to call out as the one that I enjoyed the most is actually Spirits Will Collide, which is the next one on the list. Now, this one I particularly enjoyed quite a lot, actually. I do all the way through this record. I keep wondering to myself, how the hell's he going to pull this off live? Of all the tracks on the album, I suspect that this is probably the one that'll probably will work the worst live, because you've essentially got to try and squeeze a whole backing choir either into a backing tape or, God forbid, on stage.
I don't think it's going to be an issue.
How so?
And I've a sneaking suspicion that he's going to do something like do a live orchestra or something like that with this album. Probably not for a whole tour, but for, you know, a particular show or something like that.
One recorded show somewhere in some fancy theatre somewhere.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what I reckon. I reckon he's going to do something like that. I'm with you on this track. Spirits Will Collide is I love me some orchestral metal. You know, Evanescence fan from way back in the day. Not so much anymore, especially after I saw them live because they were shit.
I figure you're probably also a Nightwish fan.
Yeah, big fan of Nightwish and Lacuna Coil and all that kind of stuff. You know, that orchestral element to things, and a big fan of like Two Steps from Hell. Mick Gordon, who does a lot of video game soundtracks, he did a soundtrack for Doom, things like that. So massive fan of all that kind of stuff. When you're mixing, as I was saying earlier, you know, you're mixing all of these elements like orchestral and digital samples and, you know, synthy stuff and all that, and you're putting it over this prog metal stuff. I love it. And that's why I'm saying I'm in two minds about this album, because there's tracks like Spirits Will Collide, and then there's tracks like Hear Me, which I fucking hate, but we'll get onto that in a minute.
We'll get to that one a bit later on.
Exactly. Track 4, Evermore.
This was the other video, other single that they put from the album, official video featuring Gratuitous Cats.
Mm-hmm.
I really enjoyed this one. I mean, I love that big sound.
Mm.
There's a lot of that on this album. You could probably say the same.
I couldn't agree with you more. Evermore, the opening to Evermore, that down, 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 down thing, I love, love that. That's literally one of my favorite things in any prog band. If I hear a prog band do that, or, you know, Carnival does it in Dead Man, it's a da, 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 that kind of thing where you've got this sort of, it's like, I kind of imagine someone trying to push something up a hill, and they're sort of taking a couple of steps and then a bit back and then up steps a little bit more. And, you know, that I love that particular rhythm. So for me, Evermore is an absolutely brilliant track. But again, it was released prior, so nothing new with that.
Yes. The next track on the album, Sprite. Now, when I first kind of run through this album on Spotify, I had to stop what I was doing and have a look to make sure that Spotify hadn't managed to sneak it out underneath my ad blocker. That's kind of what it sounds like at the start.
I had a very similar reaction to you because I was doing something else at the time. I was sort of listening to it in the background, and I thought my web browser had just started auto-playing something. And I'm looking at all my tabs, and there's nothing going on. I'm like, this is weird. So I actually closed my browser, and it was still playing. I was like, oh, okay, so this is part of Empath. All right, it's completely different.
And then about 30 seconds in, it kind of just drops out, and then it drops into the big opening riff.
Yeah, that's right. And this is where I love Devin Townsend, but there are occasions when, and all prog musos are guilty of it, I think, at some point, where you go, okay, I understand that you're wanting to be very prog here, and there's obviously some reason you decided to do this, but I, for the life of me, can't fucking figure it out. That whole song could have just started with that riff. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. I was trying to, like, while I was listening to the album, I was trying to follow through. I was like, what is the story he's trying to tell here? Because it's just sort of feels like, sounds like, probably is, I don't, not 100% sure, but feels like something where he's trying to tell a big story, like the, you know, Tommy or The Wall or something like that.
Yes.
It doesn't feel like a thematic concept album in the same way of, you know, Octavarium or Misplaced Childhood or something like that.
Yeah.
It feels like a story-driven album, but I can't, for the love of me, work out what the story is.
Yeah, I'm the same as you. I can't figure it out. I can't. And I haven't looked up the wiki or anything like that, so I can't even look at that.
That won't help you. I did look that up. That won't help you.
Oh, well, there you go. But I can't for the life of me figure out what the whole story is. I'm sure someone has. I'm sure someone sat down and listened to it like 95 times and they get it, right?
Maybe that's what this album needs. This album just needs more listens and more plays. The other thing is, as well, I'm still waiting for my copy of the record to turn up.
Ah,
yes. Now, here's the problem. Here's one thing that I cannot work out. If you've got fancy editions and you've got people on the other side of the world who have ordered them, why release them all on the day the album is released? Why can't you send the album out a week or two beforehand?
I can actually answer that.
Go on.
It's because
it wasn't ready, maybe?
If you release it out, technically that breaks release date, which means that everyone can then just start selling it early.
Okay, I see what the point is.
Yeah.
If you're going to put it out, yeah, okay. But even when they said they sent it out, they said, because you live wherever you are, if you haven't received this album by sometime in the middle of May, I think, then contact us and say it's gone missing. Don't contact us before that. Which is fair enough, because even with Australia Post, I've had stuff that's been like 3 months late and I'm still waiting. Oh, maybe it'll turn up, because you know how Australia Post is. We've spoken about it enough on the damn show already.
Yes, we have. Yep.
Yeah, let's jump to Hear Me. You said that this is one you didn't like. What is wrong with you?
So I understand what you're saying with, you know, there's interesting rhythmic stuff going on behind it and everything like that, and I agree with you on that. But to me, and I'm going to get crucified for this, it just feels like noise.
Really?
And it doesn't...
Well, it feels like noise. Live, it feels like noise. Blast beats have never done well in any live setting ever. That's just a fact.
Yeah, I mean, true. But I don't know. For me, it just, I don't know. This sort of stuff just turns me off. And it always has, you know.
Yeah, fair enough. Okay.
Even back in the really early days when I was getting into, you know, Slipknot and Cannibal Corpse and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, see, most of that stuff completely skipped past me.
Yes, well, this is the thing, right? Because I got into Linkin Park and then got into some other slightly heavier stuff. I say slightly heavier, like Cradle of Filth and, you know, Cannibal Corpse and all that. For about 3 months, got into Metallica for about two, and then just went to Dream Theater. So I skipped over a lot of that, you know. I got the angsty teen stuff with Linkin Park and Limp Bizkit and all that kind of stuff. And then I went basically straight over into prog. So I've missed a lot of that, and I probably just don't have the appreciation for the, as I call it, the Cookie Monster vocals and all that sort of stuff. I'm just not a fan of it. And you saw that at Progfest as well, when, you know, the bands had come out and they were sort of all doing that, you know, that kind of shit that just, it just leaves me really cold. I know it's technically brilliant, and I know there's a lot of work that goes into it. I just find it really boring. So that's for me, and I'm going to get crucified for saying that Devin Townsend's boring, but anyway.
Oh, dear. I'm just going to leave you hanging with that one, Dave, because enjoyed that track, actually, because it's just the overall mix of really, really heavy stuff paired with, and then you get to something like Why, which starts off like it should be a West End musical.
Yes. Yeah, and I think that's one of the really interesting things about this album is that it's quite jarring. You go from that Hear Me and then, as you say, into Why.
Which sounds like it should be some cross between like Disney and Frank Sinatra almost, I think.
Yeah, it kind of feels like it belongs in La La Land.
And that's the first half of the track, and then the second half of the track, it gets progressively heavier and heavier and heavier and heavier as you get on in the track.
Mm. And it does get that, you know, particularly in that last sort of quarter of the track, you've got the vocals coming through that are very, and, you know, not growly, but, you know, you can feel them sort of kind of like he's trying to bring something up from his chest. But then again, you finish off with that track and you go into Borderlands, which, again, feels like it belongs in La La Land for the first little bit. And then it just drops into this fucking crazy, sounds like it belongs in a like Dance Dance Revolution, and then goes into heavy stuff, and you know, and this is one of the things with Devin Townsend is that I think he genuinely operates on a very different level, and he just sort of goes, totally. Yeah, I'm gonna try this, and if it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't. And if I like it, I like it. You know what I mean? He's kind of the, in my opinion, he's the guy that releases music because he likes it, not because of what the fans want. And I think that's really, really something to be respected.
Absolutely, 100%. You listen to a whole bunch of bands have said the similar sort of thing, and Merlin and Rush are two that I tend to focus on quite heavily, but they've said the same thing. It's like, yeah, we just kind of write the music that we like, and then sort of the hope for the fans like it too. Maybe Devin's reached that point in his career where he figures he's got a relatively stable enough fan base where he could probably kind of quote-unquote get away with it. Release an album, but then, you know, Dream Theater thought that, and then they put The Astonishing out, so, you know.
We've spoken about that before.
We've discussed to death the problems with The Astonishing and why we think it probably didn't work as well as everybody was hoping it would.
Yeah, and I still believe that's because we didn't get to see the live show, based on feedback from that. So, yeah, Borderlands. What did you think of Borderlands?
I really enjoyed Borderlands. It's interesting. I thought that because I was just listening to the album and wasn't really paying too much attention to the track breaks or anything, I actually thought the first half of Borderlands was still Y, and that's where I thought, and then it cuts into the big heavy stuff.
Yeah.
But so that sort of Y Borderlands sort of works as one whole section. I had no idea how the hell he's going to play it live, if he's just going to stand there on his own with a giant backing tape and stuff on the wall behind him. I don't know how that's going to happen live. I suspect that if he's going to quote-unquote tour this album, I suspect large portions of it are pretty much unplayable live, unless you've got a big orchestra behind you.
I agree with you.
And Borderlands are both those two are pretty much unplayable live, unless you've got an orchestra behind you.
And I think there is going to be I suspect he will probably do something like that, probably somewhere where it's cheap to have an orchestra. Exactly. That's like somewhere in Eastern Europe that's not Russia.
Hey, wouldn't it be fun if he basically wrote this entire album as an excuse to get back to Plovdiv to play it again? He was like, hey, Plovdiv was such a great gig. Why don't I write an entire fucking album so I can go back and play the whole thing there?
I've heard weird things happening.
It's true.
Let's be really honest, you know?
So there's a lot of people who were prepared to fly a long way to see that one. So
this track, Borderlands, as well, I've got to admit, from about halfway on, it gets to that kind of groovy prog stuff that I really like. You know, that sort of backbeat kind of sort of stuff. And I really like Borderlands as a track.
It sounds like a reprisal of... I was going to say Borderlands, that section there you talk about, that backbeat group, that sounds like a reprisal of Spirits Will Collide, maybe? Maybe it is a reprisal of the Spirits Will Collide theme. I'm not sure.
And I think this is, again, hats off to Devin. I think he's created an album where people actually talk about it.
Absolutely.
Talking about it and saying, do you like it, do you not like it? But I think because it is somewhat secluded, the whole meaning of the album and everything like that, if indeed there is one, I think people are actually putting theories about it, and it's generating kind of its own buzz.
Did you watch any of the documentary that he put together on? You did like a 6 or 7 part documentary on YouTube. We did put a link to it in the show notes. Did you have a chance to go through all of it? There is a lot there.
I didn't have a chance to go through all of it. I've had a very busy couple of weeks.
Same here. So maybe there's, in the parts that we personally haven't seen, there's something there that sort of gives a bit of an idea of what's going on. That's the only thing that I can sort of suggest upon. So then we cut to Requiem. What do you think of Requiem?
Again, orchestral choir stuff, really like. It's a very short track too, two and a half minutes or something like that. This album kind of feels like there's two sides to it. You know,
The old vinyl days.
Yeah, kind of, in that there's one side that's like the orchestral cool stuff, and then the other side is more the heavy weird stuff, you know.
So the first half of the album is the big heavy stuff, and the second side is this sort of orchestral kind of arrangements.
Exactly, yeah. And I mean, Requiem is basically an intro track for Singularity.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway.
If you split the record between probably sort of Hear Me and Why, I would have thought, then you've got side one heavy, side two orchestral.
This is the thing, right, with this album. And you know me, I mean, I'm a journalist of 11 years. I'm very rarely lost for words. This album loses me for words because I just don't know what's going on. And it's so hard to form an opinion on an album as a whole when you're sort of going, well, fuck, I don't know where I stand on this because I genuinely don't know what I'm listening to or how I'm listening to it, etc. It's one thing to sit in a – like, look at – and I'm not going to compare the pair, right? But you look at albums like, say, Scenes from a Memory. It's got a very clear concept, et cetera. There's a very clear story, et cetera. Look at albums like Octavarium. Again, there's a theme. But you can still sort of see that the whole album was written basically in the same studio, was all written together, et cetera. This genuinely feels like it was written in like 19 studios all around the world. Like, it feels like 10 different tracks. It doesn't feel like an album as such.
Feels, I was going really to say, disjointed. I suspect this album was probably written through the mail, given how many people appear on the record and how many like orchestras and choirs and all that sort of thing. I suspect this album was probably written through the mail. You know, yeah, Devin's living in Canada and you've got other people living in Europe and America and all these other places. So I suspect it's probably written through the mail. Which is not a bad way to write records. John Anderson's been writing records like this for ages, and he's got another album coming out very shortly, actually, called A Thousand Hands, because that's basically how many people worked on the album. Transatlantic, their last album, Kaleidoscope, was basically written through the mail. I mean, they got together and did some parts in the studio, but there was a lot of stuff that was worked out, like, in everybody's home studios in America and in Europe.
Yeah, this is the thing, and I just don't know what to say about this album. It's Devin Townsend. It's typical of Devin Townsend. But at the same time, it's kind of not. I mean, there's the last track on here as well, which is Singularity.
Which goes for 23 and a half minutes.
Which I like, but I don't love it. It genuinely feels like this track could have been about 12 minutes.
I was just about to say exactly the same thing. There seems to be a lot of stuff on this record that's on that particular song that's like, it really need to be that long.
Yeah,
we've criticized certain Dream Theater. I don't know. I've criticized certain Dream Theater songs in the past doing exactly the same thing. The Count of Tuscany, for example, that looped pedal steel.
Don't you dare speak bad about the Count of Tuscany. That is a fantastic track, and I will fly over to Perth and I will beat your ass with a single copy of it if you say anything bad about it.
Look, I like the first half. I like the second half. The bit in the middle probably didn't need to be that long. That's my theory.
The wishy-washy volume swells solo-y bit.
Yes.
Yeah. No, I tend to agree with you on that, because you've got to remember, that was Petrucci's thing that he used to do live, and that was the first time that he'd actually recorded it on the thing. And I remember seeing it live, and it was so much better live because there was all this feedback, and it was just awesome. And I'm really sorry to the listeners at the moment, by the way. The dog next door is going off. It's nuts. So I'm sorry if you can hear the dog in the background. But it's an absolutely incredible moment live, but it doesn't translate across on a disc, and I have to agree with you on that. Kind of the same here with this particular album. I feel that this album would translate amazingly live with a light show and videos to support it and all that kind of stuff, right? But it just feels like it's missing something.
This album deserves to have I imagine somewhere like, I don't know, Radio City Music Hall or the Roman Amphitheatre in Plovdiv or something. Big production, full on choir, orchestra, backdrop, the whole shooting match, everything, a whole lot. But with the album, we just don't get that.
Yeah,
We don't get that sort of the projections and the stuff. You know what would be really interesting? To see, what if a studio album was released as a Blu-ray with all of those projections and stuff, and that's the record that you play?
I think that would actually be really cool. But you know what people are like today? People, generally speaking, not everyone, people don't want to sit down and watch something like The Wall anymore. They just want to listen to the music of it.
And yeah, that's a good point.
When you've got guys like Devin, who operates on a very different level to a lot of people, and I think he's a great artist, and maybe this is sort of what he's going at, is that he's trying to create something that will, at a later date, have that have the projections and all that sort of stuff. But as it stands with the audio on its own, it just feels like it's lost something. The culture around music and albums and so on and so forth is they release it, you listen to it, and if you like what you hear, you go to the show. You know what I mean? The album is no longer what they do. It is something
to get you to go and see.
Exactly. And I mean, this is from my own idea. You know, it probably shocks a lot of people, but yes, I have many Dream Theater albums. I don't own them all, right? There's a few limited editions and things like that that I have, special editions or rare versions of albums and things like that. I don't own every single one. I have a digital copy of every single album and a whole bunch of stuff that has never been released. And you've seen the collection that I've got of stuff.
Yeah, I've seen your bootleg collections. Very impressive.
But it's not – for me, it was always, okay, I will do this and then I'm going to go to the show and I'm going to drop $200 at the show and support the artist that way. And I think with Spotify culture and all that sort of stuff, you know, and all access to online media, constant online media and so on and so forth that we have access to today, the album and all that sort of stuff, it's basically releasing singles and getting people to your show and all that sort of stuff. The album for me is sort of a way that people will get people to their shows and, oh, I really want to go and see them because I like that album or whatnot, particularly with newcomers to artists and so on and so forth. If I had just sat down and listened to Devin Townsend for the very first time and this was the album that someone put in front of me, I wouldn't go to the show.
Really? Because it was just so much of a confusing concept, I guess.
Exactly. And I know what the guy's capable of. And as a muser, I'm sitting there going, okay, this is actually remarkably technical and so on and so forth. And maybe as a muser, I probably would, right? But I'll tell you now, if I gave Steph this album to listen to, she'd go, what the fuck is that? Like, she'll give it a red hot crack. She'll listen to it. Don't get me wrong. It's not like she's going to turn it off halfway through Castaway or something.
Yeah. The other thing I suppose we need to get into the middle of is this album necessarily to get new people into the band, into his music? I don't think it is. I think this is an album that he has written more or less for, at best, himself, at worst, his existing fans.
Yeah.
You hit on an interesting topic as well that I want to get to one day. About, you spoke there about, oh, this is about getting people to the shows. I would argue that that's probably not even the original, the main aim now, especially with like VIP packages and stuff like that. It seems like almost every band that I can think of has got some sort of VIP meet and greet package, which is ostensibly for the grams. Let's be honest here. Mm-hmm. Take picture with famous guy, nail it up on Instagram, hashtag famous guy, you know? That seems to be where it's going, and people seem to be paying an outrageous sum of money for those sorts of privileges, by the way.
Well, yeah.
Not even ridiculously big bands either. I mean, Haken and the Neil Morse Band have been charging upwards of $100 for these sort of VIP meet and greet experiences,
which
is a way to get people to the show and is also a massive money spinner for them.
Yeah, and I mean, I think the reason why they've done that is because now you've got a lot of, and sorry, diverging a bit, because we never do that in this podcast. You've got record companies that are now taking splits of touring profits and all that sort of stuff as well, because their funds have been diluted and watered down, et cetera, through, you know, digital marketing and digital media and all that sort of stuff. So they're trying to claw back making money, and they're trying to make money in a fucking shit business to try and make money in. I mean, Devin, we spoke about this a few episodes ago. Devin Townsend made $50,000 last year. Right, $50,000 in his pocket after all expenses were paid and everything like that, he made $50,000. Now, don't get me wrong, if I had an option of working, you know, sitting behind a desk all day or doing what Devin does for $50,000 a year, yeah, I'd do what Devin does. You know what I mean?
But it's a lot of work. I mean, he toured for, this is like a year where he was touring, so he toured for 9 months of the year. Once he paid everybody out, he made $50,000. That's a lot of fucking work for not a lot of money.
I know. And this is the flip side of it, right? And this is what a lot of people don't see. They don't see the back end of that. So, and that's why I'm I'm putting a caveat on this entire review of this album is that whilst I'm not a big fan of it, right, and it's I'm stuck in between loving some tracks and hating others, right, and overall it's kind of a thumbs up and that's about it, right? I'm not gonna go and spruik it from the rooftops. It doesn't mean that it's a bad album, right? It's a brilliant album. I just don't like it. And if by chance that Devin is listening to this, I still think that Devin Townsend's a brilliant muso, and I've said that numerous times. He operates on a very different level to a lot of people. But that said, this album is not, to me, it's not something that I would listen to. Like, I listened to it, I think, twice before we came on air, mostly because I found it really hard to get through and just and keep listening to it. I found myself getting distracted.
So I think we need to I think we need to put a wrap on Empath. You're sort of in the middle on this album. I really enjoy the album. Again, not my favorite album of 2019. Distance Over Time still takes that title, but definitely an album that I think people should listen to. Yeah, it's going to take a few listens to get through, but you'll probably enjoy it, or at least enjoy parts of it.
Yeah, exactly. And there's nothing wrong with there's nothing wrong with liking bits of it, hating other bits, and all that sort of stuff. I think you just got to be really honest with what you actually enjoy. I'm not going to tell people not to listen to this album. In actual fact, I highly recommend you do, because maybe you can explain it to me and maybe I'll then enjoy it more than I currently am. But that's just me. So,
yeah. We'd certainly like to hear your feedback on this album on the show. You can tweet at us at 98FM, or you can drop us an email and we'll put a link to our feedback page to the show in the show notes. So we'll wrap up the episode today with the album reviews that we gave each other from last week. I gave you, at the insistence of my fiance and I, King Crimson's Discipline to listen to. Now, you made a bit of a reference earlier in the show that you had to do a bit of super sleuth to find this record because it's not available as easily as I was hoping it was going to be, and I'm sorry for that. But what did you think of the album?
I didn't mind it. Frame by frame. Very, very cool.
I figured you were going to like Frame by Frame, especially the guitar bit
really
at the end.
I liked it. Yeah, yeah. And it was enjoyable, right? As well as that,
there is
the title track,
I'll drop a little
Discipline.
Video. Oof. Ah, yes. In Discipline or the title track at the end, Discipline?
No, Discipline.
Ah, Discipline. Yes.
Yeah.
That's a cool one.
I think. Actually, which one's first, In Discipline or Discipline?
In Discipline is first. In Discipline is the one with the spoken word bits from Adrian Belew, and then it kicks into the mad banana pants section where Bill Bruford is playing in 10-8, somebody else is playing in 4, someone's playing in 6. It's a crazy track. The whole purpose of that track was deliberately set up for Bill Bruford to play against the beat, because in all the tight, you know, the very tightly orchestrated things that they were doing, he was getting a bit fed up with that, so they deliberately created a track so he could play against the beat as much as he could possibly get away with.
Right. It's the one that starts up with the guitar bit. It's like, do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do.
No, that's Discipline. That's Discipline.
Then it's Discipline. And this particular...
That's Discipline.
The reason why I've actually got the track list up here, because the unofficial version that I've managed to find on a particular website, and I'm not going to link to it or tell people where it is and so on and so forth, but you can find it easily enough if you look, it's actually got all the tracks in different orders. So that's why I had to check what it was. But no, frame by frame and Discipline. And I think it was Elephant Talk as well. Elephant Talk.
That's the opening track of the album, Elephant Talk.
Okay. So Elephant Talk to me sounded like, I can't remember which track it was, by Primus. You know, that kind of thing. It's a
something
really
like
similar
Jerry
sound.
Was a race car. Something like Jerry Was a Race Car Driver or something like that.
I
the influence
tell
from
the
influence from King Crimson on Primus is pretty heavy, actually. Lace Claypool's a big King Crimson fan. To the point, actually, I did see a cover of Les Claypool's new band that he has with Sean Lennon. they actually cover in the Court of the Crimson King live.
Wow. Okay.
Where the flute solo in the middle of In the Court of the Crimson King is retransposed into a bass solo.
Crimson Discipline. I actually really enjoyed it.
I thought you might.
Would I listen to it on a regular basis? Probably not.
I do listen to this album on a regular basis. It's one of my favourites.
That doesn't surprise me. And this goes back to what we've spoken about many times, being an actual this last week's or last fortnight's music challenges that we gave each other are actually exactly what we're talking about, which is I come from that more prog metal side of things and you come from that 70s prog rock kind of thing. And these are kind of the embodiment of that. These two albums that we've given each other. So yeah, for me, Discipline, two thumbs up from me. Definitely go and listen to it. It's a great album. However, yes, I gave you Atomic Symphony Redemption.
You mentioned earlier that you enjoy the Evanescence sound and stuff like Nightwish and Lacuna Coil and that sort of thing. Here's where I get to drop my big bombshell. I don't actually enjoy that particular style of music much.
That's fair. That's fair.
Still, I mean, there were sections in this album that I was like, okay, that's really a really, really cool musical section, especially like some of the unison solo stuff that they've done. There's definitely bits and pieces in that record that I do enjoy, but overall the sound, like this, the sound of this particular album is not really one for me. Second track, Abyss, that's got some sections in it that I really, really liked. Some stuff in that record and stuff in that song that I really enjoyed, but overall the sound of the record is not really for me. I think you mentioned last week in the show that there was definitely a heavy Dream Theater influence in this record. That I could definitely see.
Oh, huge. Huge Dream Theater influence in it. And I think that's kind of one of the reasons why I really, really like the track and the whole album, because it does have that massive Dream Theater. And I think Abyss was the first track I heard off it, and I was like, oh, okay. And pretty sure I know where these guys get their influence from.
Yeah.
And it's actually really nice to see something like this come out of Switzerland of all places, because Switzerland is always sort of about, you know, on-time public transport and watches. and to hear something like this come out of there, it's like, okay, that's kind of cool, you know.
Sure. I would recommend it to people. There's good stuff. I mean, if you like that style of music, I would definitely give these guys, if you like Nightwish and Evanescence and Lacuna Coil and that sort of stuff, I would definitely suggest this as something for you to listen to.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you're not a particularly big fan of it, I would still suggest you listen to it anyway. I bet if you took a look at our album reviews that we've given each other over the like 12 months we've been doing this show, I would say that there would be a pretty good percentage of those albums that we've I have recommended to you mostly kind of 70s prog sounding type records, if not straight out 70s prog in some cases. And you have mostly recommended to me metal albums.
Yeah.
With some notable exceptions.
Yes, with some notable exceptions. And there were some notable exceptions from yourself as well.
Yeah, I was going to say, and then I recommended you listen to Scott Walker.
Yes, and we won't talk about that.
No, we definitely won't.
Nope. Getting right away from that one.
So you have an album. Do you have an album for me to listen to this fortnight?
I'm going to give you an album by a band called Memphis May Fire. Now, these guys are really interesting in that they say they're metalcore. I don't think they're actually metalcore. I think they're sort of more like what Linkin Park would be if they came out in the metal scene today. The thing that makes them really interesting is that they're a metal band from Nashville. So you know they can play.
Yes.
The album is called Broken. They're all particularly short, typical sorts of songs, all sort of about 3 to 4 minutes thereabouts. But it is an incredible album. It'll only take you half an hour to listen to it, but definitely worth every listen. So there you go, Memphis May Fire, Broken for you. What do you got for me?
Okay, so we were speaking earlier on the show about Big Train. So I'm actually going to suggest that you listen to a Big Train album. I'm going to give you the one that got me into Big Train, which is Folklore. You can find this one on Bandcamp. I'm not going to stitch you up again like I did last time. this one was released about 3 years ago. Definitely covers a lot of the sort of sounds that Big Train are known for. So yes. I think it's a good one to start with if you want to get into Big Big Train. And at the moment, if you click the link in the show notes, you can get all 26 Big Big Train releases available on Bandcamp together, bundled, and save 40%.
That's
so
not bad.
If you like what you hear, you could do that. You could buy the whole thing. The whole digital discography is about £75.
Right. Okay.
Which is not bad for 26 albums, frankly. It's an average of about
£5
good
for 26 albums, actually.
£3 a record. So that's pretty good.
Yeah,
so
that's good.
That's
that
the one
good,
I'm going
actually.
To suggest to you. That's the one I'm going to suggest to you. Big Big Train's Folklore.
Okay. Beautiful. I will listen to that. But that is about it. For I think this fortnight, and it's been a monolith of an episode. So thank you to everyone who's sat around and actually listened to us.
One quick thing before we go. I had another message from one of our listeners, and they wanted to know what's the best way for them to help get the show out there to more people. I'll say the same thing I said a couple of months ago. The best thing that you can do is go to iTunes and leave us a rating. That helps get the show out amongst the Apple Podcast community. If you use Overcast, please leave us a rating on Overcast. There is a section there to be able to rate on Overcast. You can recommend the show. There are other applications, I believe, on Podcast Addict. You can recommend it. But, of course, the easiest way to do that is to just share the show around with your friends. If you are in a group or know of other music lovers in your part of the world, share this show with them. Tell your friends about it. Tell your parents about it. Tell your brother, sister, older people. The more people we can get listening to this show, the more interesting music that we can all share with each other.
Absolutely. And you know what, if you know a particular artist that you'd like to see us feature on the show or something, have a chat with the artist and then get them to shoot us a message, or shoot us a message about the artist, and we can approach them.
Absolutely.
You know, the more artists that we have on the show, the more interesting it is for everyone involved. So definitely share us, and that doesn't just mean with your friends and family. It means with, you know, the artists that you absolutely love. If you love to hear us do an interview with them, either on the West Coast or the East Coast, or even over the old interwebs, please feel free to get in touch with them or us and let us know your thoughts.
So I think that about wraps it up for this week.
That does wrap it up for this week. A monumental episode for this week.
Thank you very much for listening to this fortnight's episode. We'll see you all next time around. My name is Alex Hogg.
And my name is David Ellis.
We'll see you all next time.
Ciao for now.
Catch you later.